think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters.
Break it down. From the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Hour number two, 713-780-ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on The Blitz Facebook page. Find The Blitz, click like, you're good to go. There's also Twitter at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at AJ is the real, at Jon Snow with a zero, not an O, at Degenerates975. You can also text the show at 713-780-3776. And if you miss the first hour, you miss a lot of talk about the University of Houston hires. Miss a little NFL there at the end, and you miss me telling a story that's so disgusting you need to go listen to it on Podcast Arena. That's just my humble suggestion. I don't know that it's as disgusting as the flight throw-up story of yours, but to me...
There's nothing worse.
No, that was the worst, but this is the worst thing I've ever experienced. All right, so talked a lot about the Titans Chiefs, and we'll hit all the other games, but to kind of put a bow on that, I thought two things that stood out at me, besides just the awful officiating, frankly, that affected both teams. I want to make it clear. I thought the Chiefs got screwed on one... maybe a second, but I was okay with that one. And I thought the Titans got screwed on one, and they were both game-changing plays. So I think it turned out the way that it was going to turn out. But the way that the Chiefs in the second half couldn't get the ball to Tariq Hill, who had a bad drop too. But that it was just all the
had
things.
Multiple drops.
Yeah, well, all the things that worked for him in the first half, they got away from, and I'm with you, just hand the ball off at that point. It's 21-3, run clock, hand the ball off. And now I know then people are going to criticize them for being too conservative if it gets tight. But if it gets to be 21-10, okay, open your offense back up a little, but that guy should be running the football for you. And Tennessee, I'll give them credit, man. They didn't quit. They took advantage of some holes in that. And the Chiefs have been bad against the run all year. And I know Henry had a great game, but that's something you can take advantage of, and they did. But good for the Titans. They're going to get mashed next week. But I was happy to see him win that game.
Yeah, I don't know that I really cared because I knew who – I mean,
I just wanted him to cover, and once that was done, I was fine. But I also felt like the Chiefs, to me – the way they were playing in the second half, I'm like, this team doesn't deserve to keep playing. They really
don't. Got it with you.
And Tennessee went in there and took it away from them, so good for the Titans. And, you know, that's a good win on the road.
The night game on Saturday was the Falcons and the Rams, and a little less scoring than most people would have predicted, but never felt like the Rams were in this game.
No.
It just felt like, and, you know, if you look at the stats, you're like, man, what happened here? A lot of it came down to special teams play, and Farrell Cooper fumbles and Blake Countess fumbled. I mean, like they were losing the ball and just giving the ball to Atlanta in good field position, because it was a really, especially for the, I mean, I feel like they traded punts for the first four or five possessions, and then finally the Rams they botch a punt and the Falcons were able to get a field goal, and then it just started to snowball for them. The story to me, though, is, I mean, the Falcons win this game. The Falcons, I was waiting by my phone. I kept refreshing, seeing what number are they going to give me against the Eagles. Because you remember I said, they gave 6.5 against the, or 5.5 against the Rams, I said, that's just a gift.
Yeah. And that's one of the rare times you and I and RJ have all been on the same thing.
Yeah.
Feeling good about it. And it's nice to all be right.
And I said, well, what kind of gift number am I going to get with the Eagles? Plus what? And I was thinking, maybe plus 3? No. Minus 2.5 is what falls down the chute.
And which, I think that number goes up.
I do too, and I hit it at 2.5, and I'll see where it goes for the rest of the week. But I think the Falcons are going to go to Philadelphia and beat the Eagles, and I mean, then you basically got a matchup against either Minnesota or New Orleans, both who are, I mean, they're not, nobody's perfect. I mean, these are all beatable
teams. Be honest, neither are the Falcons.
No, but I'm just saying the Falcons, the six seed legitimately has a chance, a decent path to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I think the Saints have a chance to go in and beat the Vikings, and I think you could,
I think so too.
I think you could have Saints Falcons at New Orleans.
Yep.
for the NFC Championship. But the thing that kind of stuck out to me is the Rams looked like a team that was in their first playoff game in a while because exactly. They just were waiting for things to go wrong. And you know, once you get the fumble, it's like, oh, okay, there it is. There's that we knew that was going to happen. And I don't think the Falcons played that well particularly, but they got the turnovers when they needed them. Special teams made a difference, and off they go to Philadelphia. I'm going to keep an eye on that number because if it goes up, I might go the other way. I think they win that game, but I think it's going to be tighter than this game was.
Yeah,
because I think Philadelphia is going to at least generate enough on offense, and their defense is pretty good too. But I think the Falcons are better than the Eagles. I think they win that game, and you know, it's not going to surprise me if they don't.
First time in the history of the NFL that a number one seed has been an underdog in their first playoff game.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Well, and I know you were hoping for a plus number, but I was thinking all along they'd be favored.
Yeah, I didn't think they would be. I mean, especially because it just seemed like the Falcons were so disrespected given the number they got with the Rams.
Yeah,
you know?
But see, then the overreaction is they pounded the Rams.
Exactly.
And there you go. We talked a little bit about Bills Jaguars in the first hour, and you know, Blake Bortles, 87 yards passing, 88 yards rushing.
Yeah, listen, I mean, that's a weird game. I mean, there's almost no offense to speak of in the game. LeSean McCoy went out there and gave it his best, which
I admire that.
I do too, and he was decent. I mean, he was 19 carries, 75 yards, including one for 25. He looked all right. At the end of the day, though, the Bills did the things they had to do. They held Leonard Fournette in check. If you told me at the end of the day Leonard Fournette was going to have 21 carries for 57 yards and Blake Bortles would have 87 yards of passing, doesn't that sound like the Bills dominate?
They did what they needed to do. Unfortunately,
their offense was trash.
Yeah, they if they'd had a healthy LeSean McCoy, I think it makes a difference.
Tyrod Taylor is not the answer. Tyrod Taylor is Andy Dalton. He is Matt Schaub of the Houston Texans. He's a guy who, you know, you always wonder, well, if we get rid of him, what are we going to get? Who's going to be better? But he's not good enough to win you a championship. And Tyrod Taylor just he could create nothing down the field. He just doesn't have it. He's a nice,
you know,
bottom third of the league quarterback.
What's a shame though is he had a chance there at the end of the game, and then he gets his head basically ripped off, and you got to bring Nathan Peterman in that situation.
Which, I don't think he had much of a chance, but he did get his head ripped off.
But
anyway.
he had him moving on that drive, and I would have liked to have seen what would happen. But I think the difference in the game came down to the fact that they got down to the 1 yard line and couldn't score.
The difference
and then
in the
Jacksonville
game is,
goes for it on fourth and one. They get a touchdown, and that's it.
The difference in the game is they got first and goal on the one, and they throw a pass on first down when that's not who you are all year.
No.
That's not who you are. And even if you say, well, LeSean McCoy's banged up, Mike Tolbert, he's literally only there for short yardage situations. That's all he exists in the NFL for. Or
run a sneak from there. I mean, there's whatever. All kinds of things.
Don't throw the ball and get an offensive pass interference.
Yeah.
And then now it's first and goal from the 11. I mean, they cost themselves that getting cute.
Yeah,
but
you just can't make those kind of mistakes.
Because you can't put the Bills in a situation where they've got to throw the ball to win because they're just not that team.
But can I just say this? Why do teams keep throwing at Jalen Ramsey? I mean, my goodness. And yeah, I've been in love with this kid since late last year. It's like, okay, he's going to be the best corner in the NFL. And you could make a case. I mean, obviously, Minnesota fans will make a case for Xavier Rhodes. But I'll tell you what, right now, if I could pick one cornerback on my roster, I mean, the guy's in his second year.
He's good.
And he's only going to get better. And he's got safety size almost. He's just – and he's so great in coverage, and he's a playmaker. I'm not throwing the ball. Nathan Peterman has no business throwing the ball near Jalen Ramsey. But, yeah, he would be my choice. And, you know, he made all pro, so good job.
I saw the discussion of, well, if they were playing, if that was Tom Brady who threw that ball instead of Nathan Peterman, they would have said that that wasn't a catch and that's an incomplete because he didn't touch the ground.
Bollocks. That ball didn't touch the ground.
But at the end of the day, do you really think Nathan Peterman was going to do anything differently with one more play?
No, it was 4th and 20, right?
Yeah.
I mean, 4th and 10 or 4th and 20. I don't remember. I think there was a penalty in there. So, no, I don't think anything different was going to happen. You just chuck it downfield and hope you get, you know, lucky. But, I thought Jacksonville's defense, it'll be interesting to see them going into Pittsburgh. They obviously feel like they can win there because they did. But
yep.
I don't think they're going to get 5 interceptions this time. I don't think you're going to see.
Seems unlikely.
Don't think you're going to see Big Ben do that. But that's a very interesting matchup because obviously they think they can go up there and win. And then Panthers-Saints, it's the only game I was wrong about. I wasn't wrong about the winner. I was wrong about the spread. Saints did not cover. But big game for Drew Brees. And I thought this was kind of the opposite of the first two Carolina games. Carolina couldn't stop the run the first two times they played. Well, this time they did a really good job against the run. They had Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram shut down in the running game. I mean, 1.9 per carry they averaged. But that's the thing about the Saints, and this is why I think they have a chance in Minnesota. They can beat you with Drew Brees. They haven't done it much this year because they haven't needed to, because they can go out and run the football. But yesterday,
he's still Drew Brees.
Yesterday they needed him to be Drew Brees, and he was, and won that game for him.
Yeah, they got 1.9 yards per carry on the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's unreal when you consider what those two guys have done all year, and neither one of them could even get kick-started on that game yesterday.
So you go to Michael Thomas and Ted Ginn for a big play, and suddenly you look up and he's thrown for almost 400 yards and done it efficiently. Saints win. And Carolina had a chance at the end, and Cam Newton's pretty good in those situations, but big sack error at the end. And, you know, I got to give credit to the Saints defense. I mean, last week, or when they were playing the Bucs in that situation, they looked like the Texans. They let them just march down the field. And Carolina was moving the football, but they forced them into a couple of mistakes, the grounding call, and then the big sack, and that's it. Saints are off to Minnesota.
Well, if you had told me that Cam was throwing for 350, I would have said maybe the Saints are in trouble.
Yeah.
But they were just down so deep early on, and it kind of got away from them a little bit. And, you know, those numbers are – a lot of it was Christian McCaffrey taking a dump-off pass and running 50-something yards. And
Greg Olsen had a big day, too.
I mean, yeah, for the first time in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy's been a ghost.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, the Panthers played well. They made it a game late, a game that didn't look like it was going to be a game. But the Saints were the better team. They beat them 3 times in the same year. They're just better. End of discussion.
All right. We are going to take a quick break. Don't go anywhere. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.
From the RentersWarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we're back on The Blitz. 713-780-ESPN is your number. So I think on I'm going to write a story for Houston Sports and stuff on the woman on the plane. Just for the people who miss that story.
It deserves a story.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things that gets talked about this game tonight is how former assistants are 0-11 all-time versus Saban.
Mm-hmm.
You want to hear who they are, because there's really only two of them that you look at and say, okay. Jim McElwain, 0-3.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a great coach, just lost his job.
Yeah.
Derek Dooley, 0-3.
Not a great coach.
Will Muschamp, 0-2.
Not a great coach.
Mark D'Antonio, 0-2.
These guys all coach at Florida at some point?
Well, pretty much. And yeah, Muschamp at Florida, Dooley at Tennessee. Mark D'Antonio went 0-2.
Mark D'Antonio is a pretty good football coach.
Yeah, I would say so. And the other one you might have heard of, Jimbo Fisher, 0-1.
Okay.
So 0-3 are his good assistants.
Okay.
Is that fair?
That's fair.
Because I mean,
and Kirby Smart falls under the good assistant category.
Yeah, I think so too. So, because it you hear that 0-11 and you say wow, but then when you kind of look at okay,
but you also got to keep
eight of those games are against guys who aren't very good coaches.
That's understandable, but also remember Jim McElwain and Will Muschamp got jobs as the head coach at the University of Florida.
Yeah,
Derek Dooley got the head coaching job at the University of Tennessee. Those are not small jobs.
No, and they got them because of their reputation from there.
Yeah,
and one thing that I will say about and I don't like Nick Saban the person, but I think he's clearly the best coach in college football, and I think the reason is when you look at the other guys who've won national championships recently, Jimbo Fisher, when Auburn won, when Clemson won, what did all those teams have in common? Generational talents, a quarterback.
Quarterback, yeah.
And Alabama wins with whoever they put out there. Not that these guys can't play, and I still think A.J. McCarron's a better pro prospect than he was given credit for coming out of college. But it really doesn't matter who they trot out there. They're in the national championship mix every year. They're the only team that can do that. And that's why it'd be interesting to me to see if Georgia could actually pull this off, because I don't think that Fromm is a generational quarterback by any stretch of the imagination. And that's not the knock at the kid. He's done very well as a freshman. But, you know, that's not how they're built. They're built to run the football. I think if Georgia's going to win, Sony Michel has to have some big breakaway runs.
Yeah.
As much as I think Chubb is terrific, that Michelle's the explosive guy who can turn a 2-yard gain into an 80-yard run, and that's a guy that's going to have to break through for him.
I keep looking at it as because they don't have a generational quarterback. Fromm's fine, but he's nothing to write home about. I just don't see how they're going to present anything to Alabama that they're not ready for.
Well, that's the thing. I look at this. And Georgia's a very good football team. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But when you look at the teams that have beaten Alabama, and this is why I said this before, I thought Georgia would beat Oklahoma, but I thought if Oklahoma won, they'd have the best chance because they had Baker Mayfield. They had a quarterback who could make plays both in the running game and throwing the football. That's how you beat Alabama. When you look at all these games that they've lost, it's almost to a man, it's been because of a Deshaun Watson or a Johnny Manziel or Chad Kelly, who as a college quarterback was extremely versatile and explosive and made plays, and Stidham this year. I mean, that's the kind of guys that beat you if you're Alabama. It's not going to be a team that is kind of a mirror image. I do like Georgia's running backs better.
Yeah.
And I think their offensive line I like a little bit better, but defensively, Alabama is as good as they come. So, and I think it's going to be hard for Georgia to beat Alabama when they're so similarly built.
That's where I'm at, because teams that show up and try to do what Alabama does have failed historically.
I would love to see Georgia beat them, but I'll be surprised if it happens. It's going to come down to somebody turning the ball over, I think, and I just don't see Alabama doing that. I think they're going to protect the football. I didn't realize the stat until this is another thing. The wife wanted to subscribe to a newspaper, which I'm like, really? But we've started getting USA Today, and they had a real nice preview. And I didn't realize Jalen Hurts has one interception all year.
Yeah, careful with the ball.
Yeah, and that's just incredible. And he'll make some plays with his legs. And I think in the end, it's going to come down to
he's nothing special, but
no, don't say that around here because here.
The truth is, you can go back through time of these Alabama championship teams, and with the exception of A.J. McCarron, who I think was a major player for them.
He was a playmaker on offense.
But with that exception, I mean, they've had sort of neutral guys at quarterback who just don't blow it for them. And that's what Nick Saban asked of them is, hey, if you're going to be our quarterback, we just need you to not blow it.
Yeah. John, is the cough button on this thing not work anymore? Did somebody screw up the? He's not listening to me.
He's paying no attention.
Yeah, that's typical.
But yeah,
did someone break the cough button on this thing?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, because how about now? Can you hear me talking on air?
Yes.
Okay, so it's not working. Just so you know.
Oh.
And I tried pushing the off button. That didn't work either. Yours works.
Mine works.
Okay.
Yours doesn't.
No.
Hello.
Yeah. So if I might pass that on, could we get that fixed? Because, you know, I don't want to snot all over the air, which might happen. Jason asked, out of all the free agent rookie quarterbacks coming up, who is the best fit to take the Bills back to the Super Bowl? I think this is actually going to be a pretty good free agent class for quarterbacks, especially if the Chiefs part with Alex Smith. That's a guy that can help a team.
Kirk Cousins is the answer to that question.
Kirk Cousins will be...
He's the number one guy.
I think he'll be the number one guy in free agency.
I don't think the Bills are getting Kirk Cousins.
I would guess Denver or maybe even New York if they cut Eli Manning.
Here's my
question. Another thing is Eli Manning might be available. I think you're going to have a pretty good pool for a change.
Eli Manning's not the answer either.
I don't think he's for Buffalo, no.
So let's put yourself in the shoes of Buffalo. How much of an upgrade is Alex Smith over Tyrod Taylor? He's an upgrade. But Alex Smith falls into that same category of guys who, they're pretty good,
well,
but are they a Super Bowl caliber quarterback? With Andy Dalton,
probably not.
Or with Alex Smith, I tend to say no.
But is he an upgrade enough to get you to the next round of the playoffs? Probably so. I think if you have, maybe. I don't know.
If that's your goal, I guess.
Well, and until the Patriots die.
Until Tom Brady leaves the Patriots.
Yeah, which, and all this stuff about them hating each other and Bill Belichick going to the Giants. I think he addressed all that today and basically said, I'll be here. You know, in 6 months, nobody will be talking about that story. But what a crap story that was.
Yeah.
If nothing happens.
Well, there's more stuff that came out about it today, about how the Browns never had a chance to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo, basically because Belichick wanted to keep Garoppolo and Bob Kraft wanted to respect Brady and move Garoppolo on because I guess Brady and Garoppolo had beef. I mean, I don't know what to believe, though. I don't know what to believe because everything's he said, she said. I'm guessing when it's all said and done, when Tom Brady writes his book or Bill Belichick writes his book, then we'll know. Until then, I have no idea what to believe. I just because, like always, I assume that the Patriots are going to come out and be the Patriots. And they're gonna play the level of football that they always do. From now until they decide not to.
And I don't know whether I believe that they wouldn't trade him to the Browns. I mean, the Browns screwed up the McCarron trade.
Yeah.
So, 281 asking for some advice. I'll tell you what, we got Lance Erline coming up next. But stick around. We'll get to you at 6 o'clock, okay? I promise. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
From the renterswarehouse.com studios in Houston, Texas, this is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. And I thought you'd stop the music. I didn't realize there was a space there. The co-host of The Bench, you just know him as the great Lance Erline. You can follow him on Twitter at Lance Erline.
Moderately average Lance Erline.
Oh, you're the biggest star.
Shell right of here, his pal. Former self, Lance Erline. They like
without
to call
question.
Him here.
Without question.
Living on his reputation, Lance Erline.
No
they like
question.
To call him.
Coasting.
Mailing it in. Pulling a big old.
I call myself Ed Reed.
Calling a big old rich lord he's doing over here.
Just punching that paycheck. Chick, 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 chick. Where's the time card? In and That's out, it. In and out. Soon as 9:30 hits, I'm gone. I go home and hang out.
That's the Ed Reed, huh?
Yeah. No, Ed Reed was at one time had it, and then he's like turned into coach. I used to joke to you as Coach Ed Reed.
Cause man.
I got my play sheet right here. I'm trying to coach these boys up. Well, we're going to play.
Was that after he realized that he's just not that good
anymore?
It
was when he was a Texan, basically.
Right.
He was always hurt or couldn't play, so he had a play sheet. I'm like, is this a coach? Like, or is this Coach Ed Reed?
I'm not going to lie. I remember when they signed Ed Reed. Just because I've always been a big Ed Reed fan, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is awesome. Yeah, I mean, just I don't know how much he's got left.
I had watched his tape. I was not super excited.
Yeah,
because I knew the name. I knew that there would be excitement, but like as a football player, he just wasn't the same guy.
Didn't have it anymore.
Yeah, that was
it's
a
damn
hard
shame.
Playing guy. Like once those guys who give everything physically, once the talent starts to dip a little bit. It starts to get tough because their whole game, like, you're seeing everything all the time. And when they're not, like, they're going to play so hard that eventually they play themselves into some physical issues. And that's what happened to him. Yeah. Ed Reed just had a shoulder issue, a hip issue. That's the reason he couldn't. He tried to hide a hip issue from the Texans. The Texans didn't know he had a hip issue because he didn't disclose it. That was the big problem with Ed Reed. I mean, he just got beat to hell.
Just didn't have anything left.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's go over some of the games with you. Get your thoughts from what happened this weekend. Did you see any way in hell Tennessee was winning that game?
No. I thought it was going to be. I mean, it looked like the Tennessee we've come to know and tolerate for a while. And then Andy Reid got a little too geniusy with throwing the ball instead of running the ball. They lost Travis Kelce, and the offense became really stagnant. And it was just that momentum switch. And it's funny because this happens seemingly way more in the playoffs than in regular seasons, or maybe we just recognize it more. But when the playoff momentum starts to change, especially against a team who has a history of struggling like the Kansas City Chiefs have recently at home, all of a sudden I think it does legitimately turn into that, uh-oh, here we go again, and you start playing not to lose. And that kind of momentum, if you have a team on the other side that picks up the juice a little bit, it can really be a problem. I didn't know if Tennessee had enough to bring it back, but clearly they did. And I don't know how they lost. Honestly, I don't know how Kansas City lost. I mean,
Kareem Hunt had 5 carries in the second half.
That's how. Yeah.
That's how they lost.
They didn't run the football.
Yeah, that's a Andy Reid decision. And then, of course, the offensive coordinator gets hired the next day as a head coach. So what do I know? The Falcons, were you surprised at all what they were able to do to the Rams? It seemed like statistically the game was pretty even. And in fact, the Rams outperformed them in a couple spots, but those special teams turnovers just killed them, and the Rams could never get in the end zone.
Yeah, Farrell Cooper killed them with his turnovers. And then the fact was the Rams just weren't fast enough. Their offense wasn't, they couldn't match the speed of the Falcons. The Falcons defense looked they were flying around all over everything. And you couldn't get a consistent offensive effort. Like Gurley got some things cranked up, and you had Cooper Kupp. I mean, you started to get it cranked up a little bit, but you had already lost so much momentum from they lost the touchdown because of the non-catch. You'd lost momentum because of Farrell Cooper's turnovers. And then I thought the Falcons just wouldn't let you get quick strikes because their pass rush, well, they're just fast all over the place. Yeah. I was about to say with their pass rush, but then their secondary. Well, actually, it's their linebackers too. Everybody can run on that defense.
Is it ridiculous to say the Falcons, after getting this win, now have a visible path to making the Super Bowl? Like, it's not absurd to think they could make it to the Super Bowl now?
So I think that common sense would tell you yes, but here's my problem with that. You have to work off of the assumption, and I assume both of you guys are working off the assumption that Matt Ryan is a big reason why you can win.
Yeah.
He's got the experience and all that stuff. Go do this. Go back, and you can do it right now if you want to. Go just Google Matt Ryan's stats and just go look at him. What do you think he did this year? Would you have any idea what his touchdown interception numbers were?
I think it was like 23 to 12 or something like that.
20 to 12.
20 to 12?
20 to 12. Not good. Not even 2 to 1. If you look at 3 of his last 4 years – are similar. He had the last year was a monster year, but I almost feel like that was an outlier year. I'm starting to think it was the norm, but it wasn't the norm. It was really, and you guys play fantasy football too, and you play the what I like to call the game within the game, and so we're more in tune with performances. Matt Ryan had a time where he was that guy, and then it really fell off for 2 or 3 years, and then he got it back last year, and I think we all assumed he's back to being that guy, but then it fell off again this year. Well, Kyle Shanahan's gone. They didn't run the ball the same way, and I think his offense is his success is predicated on how they run the football. And I look at their path, and I say, yeah, on paper, I would say defensively, they absolutely have the path, but I don't know if they can win. I'm not even sure I like them, especially as a favorite, as a road favorite, 2 weeks in a row traveling on the road against Philly.
Coast to coast, too.
Yeah, coast to coast, going west to east. So I'm not a fan of that. I mean, I'll take the points in Philly all day long, and I think that Philadelphia defensively is going to be more ready. They're going to scheme up some things based on what they saw against the Falcons. And I don't believe in Nick Foles any more than you guys do.
Right.
But I still question whether or not Atlanta can get there because of the travel schedule. And can you get – I mean, Matt Ryan's numbers were, 218 passing yards, 1 passing touchdown.
Right.
He's very shabby.
Whatever you think of Matt Ryan, though, would you agree that in a head-to-head matchup against Nick Foles, the matchup favors Matt Ryan?
Yeah, sure.
And a head-to-head matchup against Case Keenum, the matchup favors
Matt Ryan. It's funny. John and I got on that conversation, and John said the same thing. And I said, you know, yeah, I would usually say that, and especially with all that experience. But the way that the two guys have played, Case has played better than Matt Ryan this year.
Yes.
It's just a fact. It's not even an opinion. Case has been a more consistent player. Now, of course, Matt Ryan has playoff
pedigree,
and he has some success under his belt. So you have to – I think we default to that pedigree. But if you default to that pedigree, then you should have no doubt who you're playing tonight, Georgia, you know, Jalen Hurts versus Fromm. There should be no doubts. If you're a pedigree guy, then you fire on Alabama with everything you got. Because
it's already done.
Yeah, I figured you already did.
I guess I'm a pedigree guy.
You're a pedigree guy. But yeah. My only argument, though, would be I don't know that if Case Keenum, if all things are equal and Case and Matt Ryan play equally, I don't know. It's pretty interesting. Those two defenses are both.
Atlanta's playing really well,
they're really dangerous.
Right. Atlanta can be good, but Atlanta's defense has been inconsistent, whereas the Vikings have been
Minnesota's been pretty consistent. And Minnesota has really good cornerbacks, too. I was going to give you the first three questions.
Hey, he just took over. Yep, keep going. You're doing fine.
Oh, yeah, I did forget that was supposed to be the game this week.
Yeah, Fred was supposed to have the first three.
I usually am I'm usually the designated interviewer.
I got you.
I mean, not all. I mean,
unless John handle a lot.
If it's about horses, then Fred is the master. I don't know anything about horses, and I always sound like an idiot when I talk
UFC.
To
is it just you, or does Fred jump into?
It's just me when we do UFC interviews.
I tend to stay out because he knows more about it than anybody. What am I going to add to the? Mm-hmm. Every now and then, I'll have a question pop up that might be more general. Mm-hmm. For the most part, just stay out of the way. But
you know,
well, now what?
What was the other game I wanted to ask you?
Oh, Saints.
I don't even want to talk to you about Buffalo Jackson.
That's a waste.
First, let me
time.
Ask you this. Buffalo has to move on from Tyrod Taylor, right?
I think so, yeah. I think they're going to move on from him.
What's considered an upgrade? Is Alex Smith an upgrade, and is that a legit possibility, you think?
I don't know that Alex Smith is a huge upgrade for them.
I don't
honestly.
Either.
And especially in that weather, I don't know if he's a huge upgrade. I do think he's a huge upgrade to Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville would be very smart to see about, and I understand – you know, that's a big move getting away from Blake Bortles. But you have if you don't, you better know this. You have a Super Bowl caliber roster,
and
especially defense, a window that is very special window open right now in a soft division. And if you screw that up because you keep trying to convince yourself that Blake Bortles is the guy, then you could end up really regretting it because Calais Campbell can't play forever. And you've just got so much talent that – you know, Alex Smith could just hand off and make smart decisions and scramble for third downs.
If the coach lets Alex Smith hand off.
Yeah.
Which he doesn't always do.
If he gets a coach to let him hand off, which I think Doug Marrone would do. But I think that is a Super Bowl caliber team with just a average to slightly above average quarterback, and they don't have it right now.
The Saints-Panthers game I thought was interesting because it looked like the Saints were going to run away and hide. The Panthers get back in. My biggest takeaway from the game is, do you have any reason whatsoever to believe that Cam Newton wasn't concussed at the end of that game?
I don't know. I don't know what a concussion. I thought they would check on it. You know, I thought it would be a different.
You've been watching football a long time.
When you go down like that, that's almost an automatic. When you proceed. Post play, and there's a break so that you can go down. That's almost always an automatic fall down at the sideline. Yeah, that's usually an automatic. He's out of here.
That's usually not an eye poke, right? You've watched a lot of football. Not a lot of guys fall down due to eye poke, right?
He's got a mask too.
Well, the mask is what poked the eye, allegedly. So,
oh, is that what it
is? Yeah, that's the way it worked out. Yeah.
I just know this: the NFL doesn't want to have to decide a game with officiating or concussion stuff. Now, they'll never say that, but, I mean, obviously they want the football to decide it. And isn't it interesting that you almost had two playoff games yesterday where teams are trying to make comebacks and their quarterbacks, one quarterback had to leave, and there was no doubt about Tyrod
Taylor. Well, he had the frozen arms. And
yeah, Tyrod was done. Tyrod was on the ground for several minutes. But this is a major, major issue now where it's not even – now it's going to be, Every single potential concussion is going to be mentioned when And when the TV guys mention it too, all it does is ramp up public discourse, which is ultimately pretty good. Oh, I want to ask you guys this. I said this to Granato, and Granato doesn't buy into this that much. I think in 20 years, it may be tough for the NFL to still be holding its spot as the number one sport in our country. And let me tell you why.
I mean,
so last year, 8% decline in ratings. This year, 9.7% decline in ratings for football. You can say presidential guys taking a knee, CTE. I know this. When people got turned off of basketball when Jordan left, they were done. When Jordan was done, a lot of people said, I'm done with basketball. I don't like Iverson. I don't like, you know, Dream Team 2. I don't like, and they were turned off in the play. The playing style became more one-on-one. There was not the flow that you have. It was the scores got really low, and it was not very good. I mean, the Rockets team was brutal to watch back then with Steve and Coutinho in many cases. And a lot of people turned away from basketball. Basketball right now has some of the greatest star power they've ever had. It's really a lot of fun, and there's still people who just say, eh, I'm not watching it. I'm not going to watch basketball. But the young audience, they're all watching. Basketball's up 20% ratings-wise, and people are really starting to pay attention. I think younger, more diverse audiences are going to move towards basketball, and I think soccer will always have a growth, but they missed a major window this year by not making a World Cup. And then I think football has had no place to go but down, and I think it's been propped up in some circles by fantasy football has been huge. Their growth, to me, was in large part due to people's interest because of fantasy football. It's a natural advantage that football has that baseball and basketball don't have with fantasy sports. So I don't know. I think with CTE, and I just think everything comes together, and I think it's going to hurt its popularity in the long haul with the new generation.
So I don't care about the CTE stuff, but I do think –
what if people aren't – what if the same level and the same number of people aren't playing? Because are you a box? Are you a sports historian? Boxing, for example. Boxing used to be the poor man's sport, and then you had the Irish, and you had the Jewish fighters, and you had – and you know, it was there were everyone fell into a classification. But then it was kind of an everyman – I should say it was everyman thing. And then it turned into a lot of families shied away from boxing, and they went to – it was just going to be – you're either a baseball player or a fighter.
See, I think it's cyclical because if you go back to the 20s and 30s, boxing, baseball, and horse racing were the three dominant sports in the country. And then as it turned after the war, I think you saw a shift into more football, but baseball was still king for a long time until really Monday Night Football, and that got cranked up because it was such a good TV sport as TV developed. I think that's why. But to your point, I think if anything overtakes it, I don't think it'll be the NBA, but I do think soccer could overtake it in 20 years.
You think soccer could before the NBA?
Yes, I do, because I think
– locally?
Not just locally. I'm talking about on a national scale, because I believe that, for one thing, the diversity of this country is continuing to change. Even if we put up a wall, we're still going to be bringing in a lot of new soccer fans, because that's the sport in the rest of the world. And secondly – yeah, and we've talked about this for years, that all these your kids play soccer growing up, and less are playing other sports and more playing soccer. Eventually, that's going to translate into more soccer fans. And I also believe, well, you want to talk about CTE. I think at some point, soccer needs to address that, because
soccer has some issues.
Yeah, there's a ton of issues with that. But I think that's the sport that could overtake it at some point.
I've been a big proponent of soccer's growth, too. I mean, because I've seen it. I said it before. Back in 2010, me and Granada used to argue about that a little bit. But soccer's had that growth that I expected it to have, and this is without the U.S. team being a factor. I mean, people watch Premier League soccer. They pick teams. And kids now at their disposal with FIFA have every player on every international roster, and that's how they know them.
And I think that's another factor in all these sports is video games. And FIFA's an easy-to-play, easy-to-follow video game. I think other sports – really, besides football, I think the NBA, I think Major League Baseball, I think the UFC, I think those are, they're all in their own way niche sports, but when the right guys are there, they become the number two. Like, golf was probably the second most popular sport when Tiger Woods was destroying people. Tiger Woods is gone. I think when Brock Lesnar, and whenever you have names like that, and Conor McGregor, you get people from outside, that elevates. I think basketball is kind of the one right now
because you do have a lot of really talented players, but I think it's cyclical. I don't think it'll continue that upward trend. Because I also think I was much more into basketball when I was younger, and I think a lot of people are. When you're younger, basketball is a more fun sport to follow. I think as you get older, you get less interested in it. So you'll have this group now, and then it'll kind of taper off, and they'll find something else to be interested in.
Yeah, I guess, yeah. But also the younger audiences are going to be less inclined to sit tight for college and pro football because they take for freaking ever compared to basketball and soccer, which have, you know, basketball is going to be about 2.5 hours. Soccer's got it the best.
Yeah, because you know how long it's going
to be. 2 hours, 20
Although sometimes
minutes.
Soccer has like the, they'll just keep adding time at the end of the game. Well, I understand that.
But 5 minutes is about the max.
You know who's got
time.
It? It's hockey.
Yeah.
You give me the last 2 minutes of a hockey game, you know how long it's going to take? 2 minutes. That's what I like. I mean, these other games, it takes forever.
Hockey just is never going to catch on unless.
No, it won't.
In certain regional, but then it got caught on in Dallas, and I didn't see that happening.
Well, but that's why I like fighting, because max it takes 15 minutes. Maybe someone gets knocked out in a minute.
Yeah.
But it's not going to take me all night to watch
this
fight. You
get good cards at UFC. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, hockey is such a great sport in person. It's not a good TV sport.
It's horrible.
It's hard to follow the puck. I mean, I've got a giant TV, and I watch a lot of hockey, and I have a hard time following the puck. But in the arena, it's totally different.
Did you not like when Fox had the tracker?
I hated that. I think you could put some kind of thing on it without it having a little streak. Like, if you put some kind of glowing thing
on
the
puck. What if I just made it red?
Yeah, that might work. But in person, when you can actually see the plays develop and see where the players are on the ice. Soccer, to me, is the same way. In person, like a lot of times on TV, you're watching soccer, and here's a guy, it looks like he's just kind of standing there by himself. Mm-hmm. And the reality is they're setting up a play around him, and you can't see that on TV. And I think that's one reason that I love hockey so much in person. Matter of fact, I got to go see the Blackhawks yesterday while I was in Chicago. But it's just so much better because you see everything developing. You see what they're trying to do. You can see when somebody's about to get a breakaway. And when you look at sports like football and basketball, so much better on TV maybe than they are in person. Now, maybe football is better for you in person because you're seeing the whole field. But I think casual fan.
I don't know how you guys, we never talked about this, but see, I like the camera that they were using, the spider cam, whatever they called it, when they were behind the play. I thought it gave me a brand new appreciation for quarterback play and how quick everything has to be. Like, man, you realize, it's almost like first-person shooter games where you realize, holy crap, look how fast Ben Roethlisberger has to decide and get the ball out. You could see route breaks. I thought it was fantastic. But nobody was down the middle on that. You either loved it or you hated it.
I noticed. But I think from your perspective, it'd be something you would love.
Oh, I loved it because it gave me a true perspective of the field. And I wish that they would zoom out a little bit. Instead of everything being tight on the line, the sideline view like we get for TV, I wish they would zoom out a little bit and just give us a little bit more of the field so we can see how things, you know, unwind.
Well, I still prefer football in person because you can see the receiver breaking open and you can see, you know, you can see the plays down the field before they happen. And TV doesn't quite do that, but it's still one of the best sports for TV because it's pretty easy to follow and for the most part. Basketball is the easiest because you could show the whole court, really.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, that's part of it, too, is what looks good on TV. And baseball is one that I think is pretty good on TV, but it's just so slow, you know?
Guess what? It's slow in person, too.
Oh, yeah, it is. But in person, at least it's a more social game. People will have, you can have a conversation during a baseball game.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me during a football game. But during a baseball game, you could sit there and, you know, because there's time.
You can have a chat.
Yeah. It's a good date game, actually.
Yeah, I can see that. But I can see that. And then you can roll out in the sixth inning if you want to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a big deal.
Yeah. All right.
All right, boys.
Thanks for coming in, man.
Yeah.
Always fun.
What's your prediction on the game tonight?
I'm going to go Bama 24-10.
Okay, that's under. That's good.
Yeah, I don't see a high scoring game. I mean, I don't see Jalen Hurts cranking up a high scoring game, and I definitely don't see Alabama letting a freshman quarterback. I mean, look, if you can gash them with your two running backs, go ahead. But Kerryon Johnson did the best job I saw this year, and he averaged like 3.4 yards.
Yeah,
no
running backs are going around gashing.
You just got to grind it.
Yep,
that's it. And last I checked, Fromm is not going to be Deshaun Watson.
And grinding against Alabama typically has not worked out.
Nope. Typically not.
Yep. Under 44. To me, it's as easy as Jacksonville, Buffalo under 39. But what do I know?
I like your side on that
one. All right. Quick break. Lots of good stuff to go. That's Lance Zierlein. Check him out every morning, 7 to 9:30, right here on the station.
It is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.